From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
It is overdue. She should have done this at least a week ago. I'm happy to see that. I'm happy to see that she has heeded the call of both Republicans and Democrats. Now we have to pick up the pieces. We have to rebuild the American people's faith and trust in the Secret Service as an agency. I hope that the interim director or whomever is appointed to replace Director Cheadle will be very sober-minded about the responsibility and take into account the very dangerous times in which we live.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson earlier today responding to the news that the director of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, had resigned. This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. We're going to get additional reaction to Cheadle's resignation from the Hill in just a moment. Also, while most eyes are focused on the domestic drama of who is running the White House and who is running for president, the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party held a hearing today on how the CCP is exporting their authoritarian tools.
From the tyrannical Maduro regime in Venezuela to the Ayatollahs of Iran, the CCP exports its malign technologies to help authoritarian governments control the internet and oppress their populations. Not only does this undermine human rights globally, but threatens America's national security by creating a network of pro-CCP governments that increasingly owe their hold on power to the CCP.
That was the chairman of the committee, Michigan Congressman John Molinar. We're going to talk with Iowa Congresswoman Ashley Hinson, a member of the committee. It's a very important topic. We're going to explore that more in just a moment. And I was up on the Hill earlier today for a meeting with the House Speaker, and the security is already tight in preparation for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech to a joint session of Congress tomorrow. We're going to discuss what the Prime Minister needs to accomplish with his speech, both here in the United States and back home in Israel, with CBN Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell. The political landscape in America has changed dramatically. A disastrous debate, an attempted assassination, and now a new presidential candidate. We'll talk with Aaron Van Allen, a political analyst and associate professor of government at Liberty University, about the changes and what the November election is going to look like. And then finally,
Vice President Harris will be the Democratic nominee for president. Whether people put in a press release or not, that is going to happen. She's locked up the delegates and the support. We look forward to helping and being a partner in this process with her.
That was House Democrat Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar today declaring Kamala Harris will be the presidential nominee for the Democratic Party. Dan McLaughlin, senior writer at National Review Online, is going to join me for a look at Kamala Harris's record. What has she done since being in office, not just as vice president, but as senator, attorney general for the state of California? We're going to take a look at her record. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you. If you miss anything, it's all archived. You can check it out later at TonyPerkins.com. Also, I'd encourage you, if you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, not only do you get Washington Watch, you also get to Stand on the Word, a daily devotional, and you get the news feed from the Washington Stand. So go to the App Store, download the Stand Firm app today. This morning, the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party examined what's known as the CCP's Great Firewall, an extreme censorship effort that advances societal control over Chinese citizens. Now, we see the importance of this Great Firewall to Communist Party officials by the fact that despite China's massive military buildup, the CCP still spends more on its own internal security than on its military. And that's saying a lot. Even more disturbingly, the Chinese Communist Party exports this surveillance technology abroad, aiding other authoritarian regimes, including the mullahs of Iran. Joining me now to discuss this is Congresswoman Ashley Hinson. She serves on the House Select Committee on the Strategic Competition between the United States and the Chinese Communist Party and the House Appropriations Committee. She represents Iowa's 2nd Congressional District. Congresswoman Hinson, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Of course, Tony. Thanks for having me.
So Let's jump right into this hearing today. I think a lot of eyes are distracted. You know, we're even when we're not focused on domestic politics, we've got Ukraine, we've got the Middle East, but China's a real threat. What did you learn today?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, I think we reiterated what we already know, which is that China continues to rule its own people with an iron fist. The CCP tightly controls all of the information that the Chinese people are able to consume. They are obviously trying to control the narrative. I heard in your intro they spend billions of dollars, right? They have lots of people in charge of controlling the narrative there. But that is really so that they can continue to control every aspect of their citizens' lives. So this great firewall that they've constructed is it's kind of this not only censorship platform, but it's a propaganda machine as well. And so they don't have a free press. Their people are hungry for this information. And so I think the key takeaways I have from this is we need to do everything we can as the United States and with our freedom-loving allies to figure out new and innovative ways to get that information to them. They aren't accessing that outside information. How can we make sure we get it to them? And then second, takeaway-wise, I think it's really important that we look at diplomacy opportunities. China is certainly taking advantage of that through their Belt and Road Initiative. We call it the debt trap diplomacy, mm-hmm. but they're doing the same thing with technology as well.
Yeah, very disturbing because China is also a great abuser of religious freedom. Their intolerance there toward religious minorities is well known. And this technology is a part of that repression of those minority communities. And so the fact that they're exporting this technology to other authoritarian regimes, very disturbing. What are some of the other countries that they're developing these relationships with as it pertains to this surveillance technology?
Yeah, well, look at it's BRIC, right? So it's Brazil, Russia, Iran. I mean, these are countries that clearly, they have these new kind of alliances that are forming out of trade deals, but also out of these technology deals. And then you look at countries that are in trouble, right? We have a lot of those in Africa, for example, where they've been able to come in and not only control ports, but then get this technology out to many rural areas that otherwise might not have access to information. So this could be the latest, greatest thing to some of these communities who have been kind of cut off from the world. But all they're going to see is the CCP view. And that's what's, I think, incredibly disturbing. One of the other takeaways out of that hearing today, you know, I asked a little bit about rip and replace and how we as the United States, you know, we love cheap technology. And that's the biggest challenge here is how do we balance protecting ourselves and these nations as well, protecting themselves from the CCP's malign intentions with access to technology so that people can continue to grow, to innovate and advance thought. So that's kind of the balance we're trying to figure out is what is government's role in that going forward.
So let's talk about that. So the issue there being the cheap technology that's coming from China that American consumers, they want the best price, but we're fueling this repressive government by, you know, with our dollars, the profits that come from American consumers. So there's not just a government role here, but there's also a consumer role when you consider what your profits are being used for.
Right. So one of the examples in the hearing today was about solar panels, how that technology was actually American innovation, that IP was stolen. And then the Chinese are now manufacturing and using that stolen IP to sell those products back into the United States for solar. So I think that's, you know, the circle has completed itself there. One area where we're trying to look at enforcement, right, because this is one thing the CCP is very good at, is continuing to find workarounds. We're looking at trade enforcement, tariff enforcement. Is there more that we need to be doing to actually go after these egregious examples, which we continue to find examples of? So I think we should go into this eyes wide open, though. Every dollar that we send to the Chinese Communist Party is going to be used against the United States in one way or another.
Congresswoman Hinson, I think that is an excellent point. And so it's not just the government that has a responsibility here. It's the consumers as well. And I do think it's important to be exposing this and how you just describe the circle where the technology is being stolen from the United States, taken to China, manufactured and sold back to the United States. I think that's important for consumers to know. I want to go back to something you said just a moment ago, Congresswoman, about getting information beyond the firewall. You know, back in the before the fall of the wall in Eastern Europe, when the wall came down in the late 80s, early 90s, and freedom began to move there, we had the Voices of America that would send signals. Of course, that was back in the days of radio signals. Is there some discussion about how we get the message across this great firewall, given that so much is driven today by the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the technology side is really, really key here. You have groups of people who are trying to create that next greatest VPN access or app that people will be able to get a hold of. People are looking, right? And I think that's the most important thing here, whether it's, you mentioned kind of the Eastern Bloc and what's happening there versus what's happening in communist China. There are people who do understand that what they're getting isn't the full story and they want that information. So Radio Free Asia and getting that information out, those journalists are brave, brave people. I'm a former journalist. I had an opportunity to talk with many of them in committee a few months ago. And, you know, these are people whose families are being threatened because they are trying to not only expose that the malfeasance, the malign activities, the genocide that's happening, for instance, to minorities and people, the Uyghurs, for example. But their families are being threatened for their reporting. So I applaud their bravery and I applaud the technology side for these innovators who are continuing to try to figure out how to get this information.
That's another good point that you bring up, Ashley, that the technology can be used for good or bad. It's who's using it. I mean, we can use it to get information in. It can be used to block information from coming in. And I think this is something that we even have to have this discussion here domestically. When we look at the use of technology, even by our own government, we want to make sure that it's not used for malign purposes, but it is used to preserve and uphold freedom, not take it away.
Absolutely. And that's something I think we're very, very sensitive to. We want to make sure we're giving the intelligence community the tools that they need to do things in the right way. But we sure want to hold them accountable for the mistakes of the past and make sure they don't happen again. Because I think if there is one thing that we value here in the United States, it is that we don't have a surveillance state without due process. Right. We need to make sure that we respect those laws on the books and preserve American freedom, because that is certainly something that they do not have in the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah. And if you're not protecting it and being vigilant, you could easily lose it in this modern day of technology. We just got about 45 seconds left, and I want to get your response, Congresswoman Henson, to the announcement today that the Director of Secret Service is going to resign.
Yeah, it's about time. I mean, it was just over a week ago that President Trump almost lost his life, and the failures of the Secret Service, there has to be accountability here. And what we saw out of Director Cheadle, or I should say former Director Cheadle, over the last week was punting on that. She didn't want to take credit for it. There was misinformation out there about, oh, did they or didn't they deny requests for more protection? I think Congress is certainly going to do its job in getting that information. We've just launched a new commission, a bipartisan commission, to try to get to the bottom of it. But the American people do want to have faith in the Secret Service. And I think that all of these people should rely on the Secret Service and know that they can trust them for protection, no matter who's running for president.
Congresswoman Henson, thank you so much for joining us today. Always great to see you. Thanks so much for filling us in on today's hearing.
Of course. Thanks, Tony.
All right. All right, folks, don't go away, because on the other side of the break, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu touched down in the United States today as Israel's war against Hamas continues. And it looks like things are heating up to the north with Hezbollah. And, of course, we've got the Houthis to deal with as well. So the world is very volatile and in great need of leadership. Quite frankly, America's not providing it right now. Anyway, Chris Mitchell joined us on the other side of the break. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at The Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday. The website, TonyPerkins.com, and the app, the new Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store and download it today. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived in Washington today for a series of meetings before his historic address to a joint session of Congress tomorrow. When he makes that speech, he will become the foreign leader who has spoken before the United States Congress more than any other international leader. Now, this visit comes at a precarious time for Israel as its war against Hamas continues and tensions in the Red Sea have escalated amid continued Houthi attacks from Yemen. With President Biden now stepping aside as a presidential candidate and many in the legacy media now distracted by the ongoing presidential campaign, the eyes of the public have shifted significantly away from the Middle East and the increasing volatility of that region. Well, joining me now from Jerusalem to discuss this is CBN News Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell. Chris, welcome back to the program. It's always great to see you.
Tony, great to be with you again here from here in Jerusalem.
So let's talk about the situation on the ground there, and it is increased in its volatility. You've got still the ongoing war with Hamas. It looks like war in the north with Hezbollah is imminent. And now you've got the Houthis. Give us an update.
Well, almost any direction you go, as you said, Tony, you can find enemies that want to destroy the Jewish state. In terms of the Houthis, last Friday night, there was a drone attack into the heart of Tel Aviv. One Israeli was killed, about 10 injured. And then Israel, for the first time, I think, of any nation, has really hit the Houthis significantly. They hit a major port, a strategic port in Yemen that was actually used by Iran to supply missiles and ammunition to the Houthis. They hit a fuel depot as well. The Houthis have been hitting traffic, global shipping, actually in the Red Sea for months, since about last November. Dozens of ships have been hit in the global shipping. 30% of it goes to the Red Sea. So it's really a significant impact they've had on not only just Israel, but the global economy. There's been about 200 missiles, drones that have been fired by the Houthis against Israel. So Israel said it's finally time to respond. If you go to the north on a daily basis, Tony, there's sometimes dozens of projectiles, drones, missiles shot by Hezbollah, many of them shot down by the Iron Dome anti-missile system. And right now you have literally tens of thousands of Israelis no longer living where they used to for in their communities along the border. We were up there. There's about 40 or more communities that are basically uninhabited right now. They're desolate. And so that's a major concern. And then we find out that Iran has maybe a week or two to get enriched uranium to military grade. The Iran being the mastermind of all these proxy groups surrounding Israel that want to simply destroy the Jewish state.
So Chris Mitchell, my take on this is that as America is really distracted in a big way, our media is distracted, our political leaders are distracted to a large degree. This is both a time when Israel is vulnerable, but could also be a time of opportunity because they're not being scrutinized with every move that they make.
Yeah, that is possible. And some people think that could have to do with the North and whether or not a major war will break out there. And will Israel actually try to defeat this this nemesis on their northern border, Hezbollah, which represents a far greater enemy than Hamas, maybe 10 times the military strength. It remains to be seen. And then maybe even possibly Iran, that would be one thing. I'm not sure that's going to happen. There are some people that are saying actually might be better in the springtime for Israel to go to war with Hezbollah. One of the reasons is the political situation there in the United States and looking to November and with a possible Trump administration that might be more where that would be. I think it's pretty clear more favorable than the Biden Harris administration has been.
So, Chris Mitchell, let me ask you this question. Two audiences, really, that the prime minister has tomorrow when he speaks to the joint session of Congress. I mean, the joint session of Congress is really they're just there. He's really speaking to the American people. He is speaking to those policymakers. He needs them on his side. But he also has the audience in Israel that's going to be watching. I think that's why the speech is in the afternoon so that folks can watch it back in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
What does he need to say tomorrow?
Well, first of all, I think he says to the American people, and this is his first visit outside of Israel since October 7th, that really Israel is fighting for its survival. It is defeating Hamas in Gaza, but it's much bigger than Gaza. We've alluded to the Houthis, Hezbollah, Iran, all these proxies. It really is an existential battle for Israel, and I think he needs to make that case to the American people. In terms of the Israeli audience here, there are some people that didn't even want him to go. They said, especially with hostages, still in captivity, it's not the right time to go. But he did go with some of the hostage families, some of the rescue hostages as well. I think he needs to tell this audience here in Israel that America, that he can continue this alliance, historic alliance between Israel and America, because Israelis here know they need the backing of the United States, both militarily, diplomatically, politically. So I think he wants to keep that bridge and sort of say to the Israeli people, I'm the one that can help solidify this bridge, not only to this present administration, but hopefully in some people's minds over here anyway, if Trump gets elected. And I believe they may be meeting this coming Thursday.
So what is the prime minister's kind of political stability right now in Israel? Because I know we hear things in the U.S. press over here. How is his standing with the Israeli people?
Well, right now there is a series of protests that are almost on a weekly basis. They're very loud. They're very organized. But I don't think they necessarily represent all of Israel. They do get a lot of attention. But I think there is a more silent majority here in Israel that stand behind the goals, the war goals of the cabinet right now and of this coalition government. Many people may not like Netanyahu personally or politically, but I believe they feel like he's advancing the main war goals, which is to defeat Hamas, make sure it's never can govern Hamas again, and to get the hostages returned home.
All right, Chris Mitchell, we're up against the break. I want to thank you for joining us as always. And we continue to pray for Israel and for the Jewish people and for you.
Amen. Thanks, Tony.
All right, take care. Chris Mitchell from CBN, their Middle East Bureau Chief over in Jerusalem. Always great to have him on the program. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the political landscape. It's changed a lot over the last few weeks. Don't go away.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Well, President Biden's Sunday announcement that he will step aside as his party's candidate for president reshuffled the political landscape in a major way, with just over 100 days until the election. Now, Democrats appear hopeful that dropping President Biden will provide momentum not only to the presidential race, but in House and Senate races where a Republican surge was expected. Joining me now to discuss this, Aaron Van Allen. He's an associate professor of government at Liberty University. Previously, he spent about a decade on Capitol Hill working with Congress. Professor Van Allen, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's talk about the political landscape. A lot has happened in the last month. Disastrous debate, an attempted assassination of a presidential candidate. Now we've got the other candidate dropping out and a new candidate emerging. What's the landscape look like?
It's a completely unprecedented landscape at this point. For the first time since 1968, March 1968, to say that is the last time that we've had a presidential candidate that has actually dropped out or stated that they're not going to be running for reelection. And that was obviously with Lyndon B. Johnson and the health concerns, but also the highly unpopular stances that he was taking from the Vietnam era. Number one, it's an unprecedented time in our country. But number two, it's very interesting to see now that within the political landscape, how is it that Republicans are actually going to shift some of the messaging that they've actually had moving towards President Biden? Have they anticipated any type of changes? And therefore, do they have any new messages in their back pocket as they go to tackle Vice President Harris? And I think number two is, are there specific groups that maybe Vice President Harris would potentially energize a little bit more than President Biden? How is it that Republicans are actually going to move towards them in hopes that they are going to come in and support President Trump? How is it that they are now going to address and alter potential messages for those independent voters? But also, what are some of the policy issues with Vice President Harris that they're going to attack or that they're going to try to use as an energetic mechanism against those swing voters, especially in seven of the big swing swing states that we're looking at right now. So the landscape has very much changed in several different formats.
Well, Professor, those are some great questions. I want to drill down on some of them, because when you look at what Republicans have been doing for 3.5 years, they've been teeing up this election with investigations showing the corruption surrounding the alleged corruption surrounding President Biden, his son, all of this. That's now off the table. It's no longer an issue. Now you have the vice president, who probably there's two issues I see that she has. Well, one she's focused on, one she's not, even though she was charged to be the border czar. The border is a disaster. I would think that's her Achilles heel from a Republican standpoint. The issue that she's probably going to make her number one issue could also be a liability for Republicans because they refuse to talk about it, and that's the issue of abortion.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Number one, the immigration issue is one that the White House, you saw very early on in the White House's, or excuse me, right after the time that Biden and Harris took control of the White House, is that Vice President Harris had a few speaking debacles when it came to the border itself. She had stated on national television that she had been to the border, that they had been to the border. She was quickly corrected in stating, well, you haven't been to the border. And she said, well, no, but we're going to go. And you saw quickly thereafter that the White House actually pulled her away from discussing anything with regards to immigration, and that President Biden and other Democratic leaders within Congress, especially Chuck Schumer and the House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, they've attempted to lead in on that conversation. And it is one that Republicans are going to lean into and in showing that she has been completely ineffective in that regard. And they're going to use that as a means to sway voters, particularly the independent voters that I believe are going to sway the election. The second item that you have seen and that you mentioned was Vice President Harris continuously speaking about the issue of abortion. And she has very much and consistently over the course of her career moved to the left of President Biden when it comes to the abortion issue. So this is something that she is going to bring to the forefront of the political landscape and in the political conversation, because she knows that Republicans have been hesitant to pick up that conversation after the Dobbs decision. So Republicans will need to come up with a strategy of how it is that they can actually discuss the issue while not dissuading too many Gen Z voters, but also how is it that they're going to play again to those independent voters as well. But nonetheless, right after President Biden had stated he was going to drop out of the election, the first thought I had was that abortion is now very much on the table moving forward for the remainder of this cycle.
Yeah, and you can't win a debate if you won't talk about the subject matter. And that's what we saw in 2022 in the midterm elections. And I think the Republicans are teeing up the same thing as they stripped it from their party platform. I think it could be disastrous. About 45 seconds left, Professor. How does this affect the down ballot races?
That's a good question. And that's something that you actually saw Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer. They actually went to the White House and they were encouraging President Biden to drop out, not necessarily because of the White House, even though they were most assuredly worried about that. They were worried about those down ballot races, more specifically some of the House races. Democrats very much want to take back the House of Representatives. I think right now they see that the Senate, while some people would say it's a toss-up, I think that Republicans still have the momentum moving forward there. But the House of Representatives is very much at the forefront of their mind. And so they're wanting, they firmly believe that Vice President Harris will give them a better opportunity to do that.
Very interesting. Well, we look forward to having more conversations with you, Professor, as we move closer toward the election. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Absolutely. All right. Well, after the break, we're going to take a deeper look at Vice President Kamala Harris's record. Now, I was just talking with the speaker, and he said this election is going to be about policy, not personality. I hope that's the case. But what are those policies? We're going to talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, your host, and I am so glad that you have joined us on this Tuesday. The website is TonyPerkins.com, and of course, we have the Stand Firm app, and you can get that at the App Store. Simply go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app today. Not only do you get Washington Watch, you get the daily Stand on the Word Bible devotional, and you get the news feed from the Washington Stand. So go to the App Store, download the Stand Firm app. Our word for today comes from Psalm 73, and you will guide me with your counsel and afterward receive me to glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is none upon earth that I desire beside you. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For indeed those who are far from you shall perish. You have destroyed all those who desert you for harlotry. But it is good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord God, that I may declare all your works. You know what? In our strength, we can't cut it. But in the strength of God, we can go the distance. For those who reject God, for the glittering idols of this world, well, here's a warning. The future does not look too promising for you. However, for those who draw near to God and trust him as their Lord and Savior, he will give you not only a future, but a story to tell. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. And join me each day for a short devotional online. Again, text Bible to 67742. As the Democrats get in line behind Vice President Kamala Harris to replace President Biden as their nominee for president, the Trump campaign and other Republicans must pivot after 3.5 years of buildup for a contest against the failed record of President Biden and his family and all that goes along with that. The vice president's public appearances may be riddled with verbal gaffes and empty cliches. Her policy record as California Attorney General and as the junior senator from the state demonstrate a commitment to targeting conservatives while embracing every priority of the left. So, what can we learn from this record? Joining me now to discuss this, Dan McLaughlin. He's a senior fellow at the National Review Institute and a senior writer at National Review Online. Dan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Glad to be here.
So Vice President Harris is often the punchline of conservatives because she has so many gaffes that she talks about, things that she talks about. But there's a record behind her. It's not just, speeches with great takeaway lines. She's got a record. And what does that record tell us?
Yeah, I mean, if you dig past the past 4 years of cliches into her campaign promises when she ran for president and the ways in which she used power as a California attorney general and as a United States senator, the picture is much more menacing. Harris repeatedly announced that she was intended to use executive power in very, very broad ways to just unilaterally override the Constitution and the president's limits on the president's power. She openly laughed at one point when she suggested, for example,
did she laugh or cackle?
I think cackled, perhaps.
Okay.
When she said that she wanted to seize guns, basically, and even Joe Biden on the debate stage said, "Wait a minute, you can't do that. The Constitution won't let you." And she laughed at the whole idea of the Constitution limiting her power. I think if you look at her record as Attorney General, there's really menacing things. She was really the one who instituted the prosecution of David Daledian. For investigating Planned Parenthood. She was the one behind the effort to force nonprofits to disclose their donors and then badly mishandling the confidential information that was handed over to the California AG's office.
Right, which that was a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, if I recall correctly, it was a 9-0 decision. I mean, that you talk about a slapdown.
Yeah, they got their heads handed to them for violating the First Amendment, and a lot of even very liberal interest groups came out and said that the argument that the California Attorney General's office was making was wrong. Even the Biden administration's own brief didn't really defend Harris's record there; it kind of ran away from it. So that's it's an ominous sign to how she uses power when she has it.
But Dan, let's talk about something that I think. But this is my thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that some may be misled by her verbal gaffes and the nonsensical stuff that she says. She's actually a pretty astute political operative when you look at what she has done with the power that she has had at different times.
I mean, she's certainly maximized the power that she had, both as AG and as a senator. It remains to be seen whether she could fully operate those levers as president, but I think she's much more menacing in that role than she is. What's yet to be proven is how she campaigned. But if she has the power, I think she will surround herself with people who know how to use it, and intend to use it ruthlessly. I mean, if you remember during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, for example, she was one of the people who read into the congressional record the ridiculous Michael Avenatti gang rape allegations against Kavanaugh, which were completely implausible.
So, Dan, what type of candidate do we think that she makes when we've looked back at her record as a political candidate?
I don't think she's actually a very good candidate. Her first run for office, she got 46% of the vote statewide in California, which is not great for a Democrat. Her one election to the Senate, the California system kept any Republican off the ballot. And when she ran for president, she got massacred and had to drop out very, very early. But there will be a lot of institutional and financial efforts put behind her to rally the Democratic base, to move on from, certainly she doesn't have the age vulnerability of Biden. So they're going to come out with a certain amount of vigor and probably a little bit of a honeymoon on the campaign just from the relief of being able to move on from Biden.
Dan, do we know what motivates her? I mean, what's the driving force behind her? I mean, we know some people get in politics for different reasons. What seems to be the motivating factor in her political career?
I would say power. I mean, she has, you know, she has pursued and seized power whenever she could. And, you know, how much of her leftism is sincere and how much of it is political pandering is always hard to tell. But I think she spent her whole career in places where she didn't even have to talk to people who disagreed with her, didn't have to consider their views, and didn't have to respect their rights. And so, you know, I think that produces somebody who really is not at all inclined to respect, you know, religious liberty and the rights of pro-lifers or simply due process of law.
Now, the next president, you know, this, of course, is the case every time. But we go to the courts. We go to the Supreme Court. We go to the vacancies on the court. You know, President Trump, that was a defining element of his 4 years, the Supreme Court. I think actually Biden, you know, he's been at record number, been putting people to the lower courts. I think that could be a part of his legacy. What do we know about her as it pertains to the courts?
Well, I mean, she is, first of all, she supported court packing openly during her presidential run. Biden has been teasing something like that the past few weeks, which presumably will go back to the repair shop now to see if it'll come out something different with Harris. You know, she was a real slash. She was on the Senate Judiciary Committee, real slash and burn. I mean, she grilled one nominee over his belonging to the Knights of Columbus, which is, you know, completely mainstream Catholic organization. So Harris is somebody who is going to care a lot about the courts, a lot about stocking it with real hard edge progressive activists.
You're speaking of those activists, hard edge activists during the George Floyd riots. She supported a fund to bail out the rioters, those who were burning and looting.
Yeah, which is not only ominous, but it really undercuts sort of the biggest asset she has in terms of trying to sell herself as something other than a straight down the line leftist is the fact that she was a prosecutor. She can say I was tough on crime, but I think some of her actions since then undercut that, as well as some of the things that she's, you know, supported the Biden administration doing, whether it be in immigration law or other areas.
Dan McLaughlin, let me ask you this question. You know, she's especially really in the last year, she had kind of taken a back seat. Well, we really hadn't seen or heard much from her other than when they wanted to talk about abortion. And then she came out, talked about abortion. Her numbers did not look good. But, of course, now everyone's rallying behind her. Is this just because, I mean, they have no other option? Or is this because they feel like this is all being driven just by a hatred of Donald Trump? I mean, what, it doesn't seem like she has a strong political constituency.
No, I mean, she'll have to essentially sort of fabricate one. I mean, if you look at the past several years, you know, Joe Biden was popular when he came into office. His approval rating sagged within a few months after Afghanistan and has never really recovered. Donald Trump, frankly, has been unpopular, more unpopular than popular, for the entirety of the time that he's been in public. And yet Harris, if you look consistently from the very beginning of the Biden administration, has been very consistently in polling, more unpopular than Biden, more unpopular than Trump, more unpopular than just about any other major figure in national politics. You know, there are clear majorities who have disapproved of her from the beginning. So she is going to have a lot of work to do to be able to repair that, in particularly in the handful of Midwestern swing states, Wisconsin, Michigan and Pennsylvania, that are almost certain to decide this.
So what's that? What's driving that unpopularity?
I think it's a variety of things. I mean, clearly, you know, part of it is simply her political profile as a true California progressive who is kind of out of step with the rest of the country. And part of it is personality. She just does, you know, she comes across as sort of condescending and somewhat, I would say, more forced than artificial, but a little bit artificial. She's somebody who kind of puts on what feels like an act. And, you know, one of the interesting things, if you look at public polling, is a fair number of people, when they really ask them, they're not sure why they don't like Harris. They just don't. But that's a hard thing to fix, because if people just don't like you, they just don't like you.
Yeah, that is. And you've got a very short window. I mean, it's a short runway. to try to change that with just 100 days before the election. Dan McLaughlin, I want to thank you for joining us. Insightful, and I know you've got a piece that's out there. We'll have that up on the website as well so people can take a closer look at her record. Appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Dan McLaughlin over at the National Review, and as I mentioned, he's got a piece. I think we've got it listed, linked at TonyPerkins.com. Again, folks, here's the way it breaks down. You know, sometimes we get really good opportunities, sometimes not so good of opportunities when it comes to politics. It's kind of a mixed bag. We need to pray. We need to vote. And we need to stand. All right? We got to do all three. Okay? It's not a smorgasbord. It's not pick one of the three. It's all three. We need to be praying for our nation. I mean, just today's program. I mean, look what we've covered. We've covered a lot. Look what's happening internationally in the Middle East with our great friend Israel. We need to be praying for peace in that country. We're instructed in the scripture to pray for peace for Jerusalem, for Israel. Of course, beyond that, we've got Ukraine, Russia, and then, of course, China. I'll say it again. I think China long term is the biggest threat that we face. But we have to be, you know, I know America, we want to be great again. But in order to be great, we've got to be good. We've got to have a moral foundation. And that means we've got to return to some truths. And that is, number one, God's creator, and he created all life, and therefore life is to be respected. He created man and woman, period. That's it, man and woman, male and female. And he designed marriage, all of those things. And these things are not they're not hard to grasp. For millennia, they were understood. So they're not just political issues. These are at their heart moral, biblical, historical issues. And those issues need to be discussed. And my concern is that, you know, we have two parties that are moving away from some of those core issues. And I'm going to do my very best to continue to talk about these issues, and you need to talk about those issues, because we need to move this nation back to a place of greater alignment with biblical truth. And so we need to pray that that happens. We need to vote for those who are most closely aligned. And I'm going to tell you, it's not going to be right down the middle. We're going to have to reach a little bit, but we need to do so. We need to vote for those who are most closely aligned, but then we need to stand for those truths, and we need to speak about those truths and influence our friends and influence the political class, get our elected leaders. We need to ask them about these things that matter, just as we were talking about earlier with Professor Van Allen, that look, the Democrats are going to be talking about abortion until birth at taxpayer expense, and the Republicans, I'm afraid, are going to be saying this. Right, nothing. We have to make sure that they get their footing to take a stand for life. It's not just a political issue. This is a moral and a spiritual issue, and it's one we cannot, as a nation, we cannot get it wrong. All right, all the time we have for today. Again, thanks for joining me. Pray, vote, stand, and also download the Stand Firm app. It'll help you take that stand. Until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, which are found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, well, by all means, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.